Okay, let's take a deep dive into something that's, well, completely reshaping industries right now. We've got a stack of notes and articles here, our source material for today, all focused on machine learning.
And our mission, really, in this deep dive is to cut through some of the hype. We want to unpack what machine learning actually is, how it works, look at the different types that the sources highlight, and understand why knowing this stuff is just crucial today.
Yeah, crucial for anyone navigating, the business landscape. And we'll use examples, particularly from fields like pharmaceuticals, that pop up in these notes.
Exactly. The goal isn't to read every single article out there.
Right. We're pulling out the essentials, the core ideas, helping you get a handle on the engine driving so much of today's AI.
Think of it as the shortcut to being really informed on this, based only on the material we've got in front of us.
Okay. So let's jump right in. The source material makes it pretty clear. Machine learning is basically the horsepower behind most AI tools we use now. How should we think about that? What's the core idea, really?
Well, the core idea, and the sources are clear on this, it's a fundamental shift in how we get computers to do things. Instead of giving a computer super detailed, step-by-step rules for absolutely everything, like rigid instructions.
Right, like programming traditionally works.
Exactly. Machine learning is more about teaching the computer to learn patterns from data, from examples.
Teaching patterns. Like recognizing a face. I think that was an analogy in the notes.
Yeah, that's a classic example they use. You weren't explicitly taught rules like a nose is this far from the eyes and this wide. You just saw thousands of faces, and your brain kind of implicitly figured out the patterns. Machine learning algorithms do something, well, analogous, but with huge amounts of data.
Okay, so they're looking for correlations, relationships, things hidden in the data, without being told exactly what to look for first.
Precisely. They learn from the examples given.
Okay, learning patterns from examples. So where does it start? How does it even begin to learn?
It all starts with something called training data. The material gives a really good concrete example. Imagine teaching an AI to predict if a patient will respond well to a new diabetes drug.
Okay.
You'd need a massive data set first, maybe records from thousands of patients who've already taken it. This data would have their age, medical history, maybe genetic markers, lifestyle stuff, and crucially, what happened? Did they respond well or not?
Wow, that sounds like a ton of information. The algorithm just sifts through all of that.
That's the idea. The machine learning algorithm is designed to search through all this data, looking specifically for patterns. It's trying to figure out, okay, which mix of factors, age, genes, lifestyle, seems to correlate most strongly with the patients who had a positive outcome.
Hunting for the signals in the noise.
Exactly, finding those predictive signals.
Got it. So once it has this training data, the sources talk about a few main types of machine learning, the ones that are really important for business. Can we break those down?
Definitely. The material focuses on the two big ones for these kinds of applications: supervised learning and unsupervised learning.
Supervised learning. The notes use an analogy, like a teacher with answer sheets.
Yes, that's a great way to think about it. In supervised learning, you're literally supervising the process because you give the system data where you already know the right answer or outcome.
Ah, okay.
So for our diabetes example, you feed it patient data and you tell it for each patient. This one responded well, this one didn't. The system learns by trying to find the patterns that lead to those known outcomes. It's learning to map the inputs, the patient details, to the known outputs, the response.
Okay, so you give it the answers and it figures out how to get there.
Yeah.
And the sources mention classification and prediction within supervised learning.
Right. There's sort of subcategories or common applications. Classification is about sorting things into specific predefined
Like
categories.
buckets.
Pretty much. The material gives some good forma examples. You could train a model to classify patient comments on social media about a drug. Are they positive, negative, neutral?
Okay, I see. Sentiment analysis.
Right. Or, say, in a clinical trial, you might classify potential participants based on their history into groups like likely to complete the trial versus less likely. You're putting things into known buckets based on learned patterns.
Gotcha. And prediction, how's that different? Still supervised, right?
Still supervised, yes. But prediction in this context often means forecasting a specific number or a future outcome rather than just a category label. And the sources have a really good tangible example here from Cipla's manufacturing plant in Indore.
Oh yeah, the scheduling one. What were they predicting exactly?
They used AI, powered by supervised learning, to predict the optimal changeover times between making different drugs, you know, that involves cleaning equipment, quality checks, complex scheduling.
Right, lots of variables.
Exactly. So the system learned from historical data how long past changeovers took under various conditions.
And what happened? What was the result of predicting those optimal times?
Well, according to the source, they managed a 22% reduction in how long those changeovers took.
22%. That's actually really significant for operations.
It really is. A concrete efficiency gain just from the model finding the best patterns in their past operational data. That 22% really sticks out.
Wow. Okay, so that's supervised learning guiding the model with labeled examples for classification or prediction. What about the other main type mentioned? Unsupervised learning. Sounds more exploratory.
It is. It's often described as more like detective work, which I think is pretty fitting. With unsupervised learning, you give the algorithm data, but you don't give it the answers. You don't tell it what patterns or outcomes to look for.
What does it do?
Its job is basically to explore the data on its own and find hidden structures or clusters or relationships that maybe you didn't even know were there.
Find patterns you weren't even looking for. How is that useful?
Oh, it's incredibly valuable for discovery, especially in things like market research or scientific exploration. The source material gives a really interesting pharma example. Unsupervised learning could analyze patient genetic and health data.
Yeah.
And maybe discover that patients with seemingly totally unrelated medical conditions actually share some common genetic marker.
Wait, really? So it could connect dots between conditions that researchers hadn't explicitly linked before?
That's the potential, yes. That hidden pattern, that cluster it finds, could suggest maybe a drug used for one condition might have broader uses you hadn't considered. It's about uncovering novel insights hidden in the data itself.
That's pretty powerful, letting the data reveal its own secrets. Okay, now back to the training process for a sec. The sources emphasize it's iterative. What does that mean in practice?
It means it's a cycle. It's not a one-shot thing. The system makes a prediction based on what it's learned so far. Then it compares that prediction to the actual known outcome. Remember, in supervised learning, we have those outcomes. It sees where it went wrong and by how much. That's the error.
And then it adjusts itself.
Exactly. It uses that error information to tweak its internal model, the patterns it's found, trying to reduce that error the next time around. This whole cycle, predict, compare, calculate the error, adjust. It just happens over and over again.
How many times are we talking?
The material mentions thousands, maybe even millions of times.
Millions. Wow.
Yeah, until the model reaches a certain level of accuracy that you're happy with. It's like that analogy they use of a research analyst getting better at predicting market trends. They make a forecast, see the actual result, figure out why they were off, and refine their method for next time. Constant refinement.
Okay, that iterative improvement makes sense.
Yeah.
So what does it actually take to do this training? The sources list three critical things you need.
Right. You need quality data, you need computational power, and you need time.
Quality data, power, and time.
And the material makes an interesting point here. The pharmaceutical industry often has an advantage with the first one. Thanks to things like clinical trials, regulatory submissions, they often have access to large amounts of high-quality structured data.
So they might already have a head start on the data piece.
Often, yes. That's a big plus. And the other two, computational power and time, well, they've become much more accessible lately. Cloud computing gives almost anyone access to massive processing power. And the algorithms themselves are getting faster, more efficient at training.
Good point. So the barriers are lower than they used to be. Okay, great. We've covered the basics, the types, the training, what you need. Now, the sources bring up something they call, I think, the most important concept for business leaders to grasp about these models. What's that key idea?
It's understanding that these models are fundamentally probability engines. They are not crystal balls.
Probability engines, not crystal balls. Okay, why is that distinction so critical?
Because a machine learning model doesn't give you certainty, it gives you likelihood. When it predicts, say, an 85% chance that a particular patient will respond well to a treatment, it doesn't mean that specific patient definitely will respond. What it actually means, based on all the historical data it learned from, is that among all the past patients who looked similar to this current patient across the factors the model considers, about 85% of them responded well.
Ah, I see. So it's giving you the odds, based on past group performance, not a guarantee for this one individual.
Precisely. There's always uncertainty baked in. And this is why the source material really hammers home the point that human expertise is still absolutely critical.
Right. The model doesn't make the decision.
Exactly. The model provides a very informed probability, a powerful insight from the data, sure. But you need a human professional, a doctor, a researcher, a manager to interpret that probability. They need to consider it in the real-world context, think about factors maybe the data didn't capture, and ultimately make the final call or recommendation. The model supports human judgment. It doesn't replace it.
That feels like a really, really vital takeaway. So let's connect this back to you listening. If you're in, say, pharma market research or a similar field, how does understanding all this actually help in your day-to-day?
Well, it basically empowers you to ask much smarter questions. If you're talking to an AI vendor or looking at an internal project or just seeing results from a model, you won't just see this black box. You'll have a sense of what's going on under the hood based on these principles we've discussed from the sources.
Okay, so what kinds of smarter questions could you ask then?
Well, the material suggests some really practical ones. Like, you can dig into the quality of the training data used, because now you know how fundamental that is, that garbage in, garbage out idea.
Right. Ask about the input.
Exactly. Or you'd understand why a model's accuracy might suddenly drop if you try to use it on a completely different patient group than the one it was trained on.
Because the patterns might be different.
And you'd appreciate why these models aren't just set it and forget it. Why they need continuous updating with new data to stay relevant and accurate as things change over time. It just helps you be a much more informed consumer and, frankly, a better collaborator when working with these AI tools.
Those are really good practical points. And the sources seem to wrap up with a very clear key takeaway, kind of summarizing the core idea. What is that?
Yeah, the main takeaway is essentially this. Machine learning teaches computers to find patterns in data through examples. That's fundamentally different from programming them with rigid, explicit rules.
And it echoes that point about data quality again, right?
Absolutely. The material really stresses that the quality of your training data is just paramount. That garbage in, garbage out phrase is a core truth here. Bad data means bad insights, no matter how fancy the algorithm.
And the final bit of that key takeaway on probability.
That ML models provide probabilities, not certainties. They're probability engines, not crystal balls, which just reinforces why you absolutely need human interpretation and decision-making to make sense of it all and act effectively.
Makes perfect sense. And there was even a specific smart question suggested in the sources, something you could literally use in your next meeting.
There is, yeah, and it's quite direct. It's basically, okay, what training data would we actually need to build a model that predicts, and then you insert the specific outcome you care about, and how would we measure if that model is performing better than what we do now?
Ah, that's good. It forces you to think about the inputs and the success metrics right up front.
Exactly. It makes the conversation really tangible. What data do we need, and how do we know if it's actually working better?
That's a fantastic question to keep in your back pocket. So, okay, we've covered a lot. We went from the basic definition of ML, how it learns from training data, looked at supervised and unsupervised types with some real-world examples, especially from pharma, understood the needs for training, grasped that crucial probability versus certainty idea, and tied it back to how you can use this knowledge, all drawn directly from the source material we had.
Yeah, I think it really distills how these tools work at a fundamental level, learning from examples, finding patterns, predicting likelihoods. And critically, it underlines that the human role, providing good data, interpreting those probabilistic results, is just as important as ever, maybe even more so.
Absolutely. And well, as we wrap up this deep dive, here's maybe a thought to leave you with, building on what we've talked about from these sources. If machine learning models are giving us probabilities, not definite answers, how should that really change the way we approach making important decisions? You know, what new skills become super valuable in a world using these tools more and more? Maybe things like critical thinking, understanding context, translating likelihood into smart action, and also thinking about that garbage in, garbage out principle. What do you think is the bigger hurdle right now to getting real value from AI? Is it having algorithms that are sophisticated enough, or is it actually getting access to and preparing genuinely high quality data, something to think about?